Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of All Things Policy. My name is Sachin Kalbat. 2 weeks after a suspected Israeli attack on the Iranian diplomatic mission in Syria, Tehran launched a massive drone and missile attack on Israel on Saturday night. It was called Operation True Promise. The attack, which began on Saturday night, according to US officials, lasted 5 hours at the minimum. During the attack, explosions were heard in cities across Israel, including Tel Aviv, according to local media reports. The explosions were also heard in Jerusalem, and air raid sirens were sounded in more than 720 locations as Israeli forces sought to shoot down the projectiles. Israel's chief military spokesperson, Daniel Hagari, said Iran's attack involved more than 120 ballistic missiles, 170 drones, and more than 30 cruise missiles, according to a report by the Associated Press news agency. Now, the Israeli military also said that the vast majority of the projectiles were intercepted outside the country's borders with the help from the United States, the United Kingdom, and France. Jordan also shot down some of the missiles aimed at Israel as they were flying through Jordanian airspace. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said on Sunday that the U.S. also intercepted dozens of missiles and drones launched at Israel from Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. Now, these attacks have put a new angle to the ongoing conflict in West Asia and perhaps could trigger a regional conflagration, even if it has been contained until Monday night at the time of this recording. On Sunday, the United Nations Security Council called for an emergency meeting in which Secretary General Antonio Guterres said that neither the region nor the world can afford more war. What exactly are the contours of this new aggression between Iran and Israel? What happens to the ongoing war between Hamas and Israel in Gaza? What is the role of the US in this conflict in terms of containing the damage? What can India do? Does New Delhi have a realistic role in becoming a mediator between Israel and Iran, given that we have excellent relations with both countries? To discuss all of this and more, I have with me today my colleague Yusuf Punjawala, who is a scholar at the Takshashila Institution and is regarded as one of the country's most astute strategic experts. Yusuf, welcome to All Things Policy once again.
Thanks, Sachin. Good to be back.
Great. Let's start with the obvious question, Yusuf, and the related quote-unquote conspiracy theory. Now, why did Israel attack the Iranian consulate in Syria? Was this to turn Tel Aviv into being regarded as a victim in the string of allegations of genocide in Gaza? What do you think are the short-term and mid-term strategic aims of Benjamin Netanyahu in this act?
I think Benjamin Netanyahu has been the kind of a problematic character in this whole thing. He has a very hard-line position. You know, we have earlier discussed conflict with Gaza and his role in prepping up Hamas over the years so that he did not have to come up to a two-state solution, you know, postpone it or kind of kill the two-state solution forever. I mean, that has been his motive. So that is one part. But he has also wanted to get in a direct confrontation with Iran for a very long time. And after Iran's massive attack, there's a very real possibility that Israel may use this opportunity to attack Iran's nuclear facilities, which is something Netanyahu has wanted to do for a very long time. He has always pressed the Americans to go after the Iranian nuclear facilities. It's America which has cautioned Israel over the years to not get into that kind of a conflict. But now there is a real possibility that if Israel has to respond to this Iranian attack now, it can use one massive attack on Iran's nuclear facilities, because that would be just one opportunity. How Iran will react to that is obvious, that they will react in a big way. But I don't think Netanyahu cares about that, because his target is the Iranian nuclear facilities. So this bombing of Syria can be for obvious reasons to kind of see where, what kind of reaction Iran has to that. And probably Israel or Netanyahu has got the kind of response he wanted.
One is that it took 2 weeks for Iran to respond. And when it responded knowing that Israeli Iron Dome will perhaps not only repel, but also defeat the purpose of the Iranian attack. So what are Iran's motivations in getting this done? Because regionally speaking, Iran does not have much support given the Shia-Sunni divide. But apart from that, just the fact that Israel has support from the US and other US allies such as the UK, what are Iran's motivations? Because it was an operation that was destined to fail right from the beginning. And Tehran would perhaps know this even before starting off.
So after the bombing of its embassy, there was no option for Iran but to do something. It had to respond. I mean, otherwise it would have consequences of its own, both domestically as well as regional, for not responding to a dangerous provocation, which it was. I mean, the bombing of the Iranian diplomatic facility in Syria was a dangerous thing. Iran wanted the world to condemn that. The UN Security Council failed to do that. And that's when, Iran's justification for this was, referring to Article 51 of the UN Charter in its right to self-defense that it went after Israel. I think it took 2 weeks for them to kind of weigh the pros and cons, balance it out as to what kind of attack would be appropriate in retaliation. Should it do what it did, or something calibrated it down at some other level, probably attack an Israeli embassy somewhere? Those kinds of responses. This response, attacking Israel from Iran using missiles, drones launched from Iran, was, I think, the ultimate provocative retaliation, I would say, because so far this has not happened. Iran has always used its proxies in Syria, in Lebanon, the Hamas, to hit at Israel. But this time it has decided to respond from its own territory. So it's kind of now seeing at what level it can go up the escalation ladder. And we'll have to see now how Israel responds, because Iran definitely has climbed up a step, because this is a grave provocation. Although it is in retaliation for the bombing of its embassy in Syria by Israel, but now this is a huge attack. 300 drones, missiles, ballistic missiles, cruise missiles is a massive attack. Israel is bound to retaliate. Will it calibrate, or will it now go up the escalation ladder? We'll have to wait and see. But I'm sure there are heads in Israel which will be kind of calling for an escalation up rather than calibrating a response.
But in that sense, the strategic aim of Netanyahu is, achieved, because this is what he wanted to make Israel sound like in the global scenario. The Americans have said that they will not intervene or support Israel, militarily at least, in case Iran attacks Israel. Which it has. But now, in case Israel has to attack Iran, which it might, Iran may respond in a nuclear way. Is that a possibility?
No. I don't think so. I think there is no evidence of Iran actually possessing the bomb. It is close to it. It has been close to it for a long time, but obviously they haven't tested. And without any test, I doubt we can... they will be sure of, having a working nuclear bomb. I don't think they have nuclear weapons. Otherwise, I think Israelis would have taken offensive action already if Iran was really that close to actually obtaining a bomb, or in fact had a bomb. So I don't think Iran has nuclear weapons. It may have a dirty bomb because it has the radioactive material. But I don't think Iran will respond in a nuclear way. Probably up the way it responds from its own territory, also use all its proxies. So it will kind of enlarge the conflict, which is something that the region and the world wants to prevent. India has also said this, that they don't want the region to explode. They don't want the conflict in Gaza, which has been going on since October, to widen. Iran has kind of been playing this game. It has upped the provocations. It has used the Houthis to attack shipping lines. Iran has in fact attacked an Indian ship very close to Indian waters very recently, just on the day of the attack, in the morning of the previous morning. I think it hijacked a ship which has 17 Indian crew members. So Iran has been kind of doing all kinds of things to test the waters, kind of say, to see what kind of international reaction it can draw. It has been doing all this, and now anything is possible. I mean, there is a very real possibility of the war expanding. So Israel will respond, I'm sure, but I hope it really calibrates it down in a way that provides an exit for both parties to kind of go down the escalation ladder rather than go up the escalation ladder.
Well, you're right. I mean, in that case, the American role becomes even more prominent, doesn't it? Because elections are coming up and America obviously does not want a regional configuration. But apart from that, from what we know from American media and from what is happening in the U.S., is that the liberals and the Arab Muslims, especially, who are residing in America and are voters, potential voters of the Democratic Party, are going against Joe Biden because of his relative inability to stop what is happening in Gaza, in which case the White House has two problems. One, a domestic problem where in the election year, Biden is going to lose or at least be alienated from a lot of his potential supporters and voters. And two, on the international front, being seen as a country with very little influence over Israel, given that for so many months it has not been able to contain the number of deaths of innocent people in Gaza.
Biden does not want Israel to respond. In fact, I read a report where Biden told Netanyahu that he's got a win already by shooting down, say, 99%. That's the claim, right? 99% of all the drones and missiles have been shot down. Very few of the missiles got through. Most of the drones were shot down outside Israeli territory. So Biden has apparently told Netanyahu, you already have a win, which kind of means that, you know, stop it here, don't go any further. Is that going to have any effect on Netanyahu? I don't think so, because Netanyahu has his own domestic constituency to take care of. And his own government, his war cabinet, is probably going to press for a response. And what kind of response comes, we have to see. But like I said earlier, I hope they do calibrate the response and not escalate up, but kind of leave a room for de-escalation. Because any major attack by Israel on Iran is definitely going to draw a kind of a massive response from Iran as well, which Iran has already warned. I mean, Iran, in its statement after the attack at the UN, said that, you know, they took this action and now it can be considered over. So from Iran's end, they responded to an Israeli attack, and for them, it's over. And now the ball is in Israel's court if it wants to escalate the matter even further. I don't think Israel cannot not respond, because this was an attack from Iran on Israel. But one just hopes that they will calibrate the response. But going back to your question on Biden and his domestic constituency, I think the Americans, any sentiment that is there towards Gaza in the conflict between Palestinian and Israeli war, I don't think that same kind of sentiment will carry forward into any potential conflict between Israel and Iran. There are no backers of Iran in the U.S. Even the Americans of Iranian descent will be happy if the Ayatollah is bombed. So these are two different dynamics. So probably kind of whole thing plays out that if the war escalates between Israel and Iran, then, you know, you'll get much firm backing for that conflict. You know, Americans will support. I mean, even, not only Americans, even the UK, France will support Israel in any kind of a conflict with Iran.
At this stage, we'll take a quick break. Yusuf will be back in some time. And I will talk to you about, the history of Israel and how does it matter here in this particular conflict. We'll be right back.
Public policy affects every aspect of your life, from the roads near your home and the lakes in your city, to education and health, to international trade and foreign policy. If you want to understand this interplay of politics, economics, polity and governance, Takshashila Institution's public policy courses are made just for you. The 12-week graduate certificate program gives you a window into the basics of public policy. You can choose to explore the areas of defense and foreign affairs, tech and policy, or advanced public policy. The course is completely online and is conducted on weekends, making it a perfect fit for working professionals. The applications for the May 2024 cohort are now open. Visit school.takshashila.org.in. For more information, visit www.school.takshashila.org.in. or click the link in the show notes.
Thank you so much for being with us. Yusuf, welcome back to All Things Policy. Carrying forward from what we were discussing just before the break about the domestic constituencies of both Israel and America, but given that Israel has a history of conflict with almost every single neighbor of its. And militarily and diplomatically, it is not a great neighborhood to be in. Given that history, how much of that will weigh in when Israel decides to retaliate against Iran?
Sachin, I think the answer lies in what happened during the attack. Jordan shot down Iranian drones. Reports say that the Middle East Air Defense Alliance was formed under the U.S. leadership with Israel and some of the Arab countries, which potentially includes UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Jordan. You know, they work together to come to the defense of Israel. So their radar facilities, etc., tracked all these drones and missiles, and everything worked very seamlessly. So this was like kind of a real-world test for this defensive alliance. And it came out trumps because all of the Iranian drones were shot down. Most of the ballistic missiles and cruise missiles were shot down. So that kind of validated this alliance and the structures, the defensive structures that they have in place. So in that sense, Iran has managed to get all the Arabs on the side of Israel. And that kind of is a loss for Iran. Because remember, Arabs have always been suspicious and fearful of Iranian nuclear capabilities, any potential nuclear capabilities and missiles. I mean, the Saudis have warned that if Iran goes nuke, they will also pursue a nuclear weapons program. In fact, they have been pushing the Americans to give them a civil nuclear deal, which kind of then probably will go towards a more of a weapons capability, which is what they have in mind. Remember, the Saudis have got Chinese ballistic missiles. They got those many, many years back. So the Saudis themselves will go nuke. So there are fears in the Arab world about Iranian missile and nuclear capabilities. And this show of force by Iran on against Israel is also going to register within these Arab countries. And that's the reason why they probably took the Israeli side in defending Israel against Iran. And remember, we'll also have to now talk about the Saudi-Iran deal, which was brokered by the Chinese. Now that goes out of the window, kind of thing. When it comes to Iran versus Israel, you know, Iran getting the Arabs, the Shia, Sunni, all kinds of mix put in, the Arabs will take a side and it's not going to be with the Iranians. So kind of this whole event has kind of got other things very clear. Strategically, Iran would kind of, you know, erred in its act of, you know, such a massive retaliation from its territory against Israel. I mean, we'll see how that pans out. Because if you look at the conflict in Gaza, the attack on Israel kind of gave them a strategic victory, you know, where it proved that Israel could be attacked. And that itself was kind of a victory for them. But now, this is a different thing.
Politics does make for strange bedfellows. So, you know, this clearly is one example. But given the contours of what is happening, do you think that India, given its excellent relations with both Iran and Israel, can enter into any kind of a mediator role here? I know that EAM Jaishankar tweeted about this, but he was more worried about the 17 sailors that were kept held hostage by Iran. But on a larger scale, do you think that given India's emerging larger role in the global scenario, can be a great opportunity for us to mediate in some form or the other?
You know, India has had great opportunities to mediate in the recent past. One of them is in the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. But we have said that, you know, we'll be ready to help in any manner, but not done anything more than that. But this is closer home. This is our extended neighborhood. I don't think India's concern is just the 17 sailors that have been hijacked by Iran. We have nearly 1 crore people living in the Middle East or the West Asian region. A lot of our trade passes through that region, which has already been impacted by all the missile attacks on merchant vessels by the Houthis. It has also a lot of our oil comes from there. So that is also a factor for us. We don't want the war to expand. Will India mediate? Like you said, we are well placed. We are friends with both Israel and Iran. Will we mediate? Somehow India seems to be reticent in this regard. I don't think it just feels, you know, maybe it is because we have our own history of avoiding mediation. You know, there was a time in the last century where we had to resist really hard when people offered all kinds of mediation advices or mediator role over Kashmir. So probably India comes from that kind of viewpoint that we should not mediate at all. But we are well placed, but I really doubt that India will. Although we should. I mean, my personal opinion is that we should.
Okay. But also, India is going in for elections just in a few days' time. By the time our episode is out, it's going to be, less than 48 hours before the elections begin in India, in which case the ministers and prime minister and other people who might be directly or indirectly involved or maybe busy with the electioneering and other political compulsions of it.
Yes, but I don't think if they are serious, then it doesn't stop them from going ahead. India has already come out with a statement which kind of is a standard where it has urged restraint and diplomacy. But can it do more? I think we can. I think the External Affairs Minister has spoken with both his counterparts in Israel as well as in Iran. In the tweet that you just mentioned, it was interesting that in his tweet mentioning his phone call with the Iranian foreign minister, he said, he urged restraint and diplomacy. And in his tweet about his conversation with the Israeli foreign minister, he said that he shared concerns over the escalating events. Kind of a difference in the tweet and the context that the foreign minister gave. But generally, our statement overall on the events of West Asia, as we call that region, put out by the MEA, was that it has urged both parties to exercise restraint and use diplomacy. So if India does want to get involved, it can, election or no election, because this crisis is of very serious nature for us. It directly impacts us. This is our extended neighborhood. So if India is at all interested in getting these two parties to cool down, then we must and not wait for an election or let election distract us from a very important role that we might want to play.
In the case of the US, which is a natural mediator in this case, Biden, has so far in the last few months at least, not visited Tel Aviv. It's always been Antony Blinken who's been doing whirlwind tours of Egypt, of Jordan, of Syria, of Israel. Do you think that this is a time for Biden to visit Tel Aviv and create some kind of a perception that the Americans are very, very serious about achieving short-term, let's not call it peace, but at least short-term ceasefire?
I don't think so. I don't think any Biden visit is going to help in that regard. You talked of mediation. India is well positioned between both the parties. As far as America is concerned, it does not have the same kind of credibility with the other party.
That's right.
Any Biden visit to Israel will kind of be seen as supporting Israel rather than trying to come out and play an honest role. I mean, none in the region, even the Arabs, probably don't think America is a neutral broker in this conflict. So I don't think any Biden visit to Israel is going to change anything. I mean, they have been pressing for Israel to tone it down, but repeatedly in the UN, it backed the Israelis until very recently, where it abstained on a resolution. But for a long time, it kept backing Israel. So I don't think Biden visit to Israel will change much. I mean, he's putting all the pressure on Netanyahu. Netanyahu has really resisted all those pressures and done what he wanted so far. He has not crossed Rafah yet, but he still threatens to do so.
And Rafah seems to be a red line for Washington as well, isn't it?
Yes. So far, Biden has managed to stop that. I think would give the Americans that they have put the pressure on Israelis and stopped that from happening. And probably, as a result of that, now, I don't know, Israelis went and bombed the Iranian diplomatic facility. So what is the game plan of Israel over here? Did it want to enlarge this conflict? We have to see. But I don't think anybody in the region or the U.S. wants the conflict to enlarge. So America's role is important, but I don't think it can mediate between the two parties. I mean, Iran will not accept any kind of a mediation role for the U.S. India is well placed.
Yeah, I mean, Tehran does not trust Washington at all in this case. I mean,
even the Chinese are not in any position to mediate. It has been very vocal against Israel. Every day since the war started, they have been, the Chinese media has been hammering tongs against Israel. So for Israel, the Chinese are not honest brokers now. India has always kind of maintained a balanced position. We supported Israel on the day the terrorist attack took place, and and repeatedly came out in our statements as supporting Israel in its effort to counter terrorism. But then when it comes to the humanitarian situation in Gaza, we have had a different kind of message. We have also advised Israel to, you know, obey international humanitarian laws, etc. So we have had a very balanced neutral position in that regard. So India is the only large country perhaps in the world which has good ties with both parties, and we are well placed to mediate. And it is not just today. It has been for a very long time. In fact, India could have mediated a long ago when the West was negotiating with Iran over its nuclear weapons. We could have got these two parties onto the table even after Trump broke off from the nuclear deal with Iran. But we have kind of stayed away for reasons best known to Delhi.
And we also have the moral heft, don't we? Given that India has strategic interests in both Israel and Iran, and the fact that we've not had any kind of political or diplomatic conflict with either of them over the last two or three decades, means that it can sit on the table with equal respect from both sides.
Of course. Like I said, we are the only large nation that both sides will listen to. And they both think that we'll be an honest broker. No other country has that image right now. I mean, in terms of any large powers, the US does not have, China does not have. US allies are, well, US allies. So the other side is not going to trust any US allies. Russia is involved in its own conflict. It's not going to try to meddle around over here. It also does not have the same respect in Israel. So it just leaves India. I mean, we are the only country which can talk to both sides.
And given Dr. Jaishankar's decades-long experience in diplomacy, perhaps he might have a solution that both countries need. But on that note, I wanted to ask you, Yusuf, short-term, because it's really difficult to understand what Israel's long-term game plan here is. But in the short-term, in the next 1 week, next 2 weeks, where is this conflict headed? Where is the Israel-Gaza conflict headed? Where is the Israel-Iran conflict headed? Because if Israel wants to have a two-pronged conflict, one within its immediate neighborhood and one with Iran, then it will have to have enough military capability to win both.
It's a tough one. So I don't know what calculations are running in the minds of Netanyahu over here if he wants to expand the war. In recent times, there's been a lot of pressure on Israel to come up with a ceasefire. Even today, there is a kind of an attempt to get one. Hamas has offered phase release of hostages, which is unacceptable. But even Hamas is trying to see if they can come down to a ceasefire. There is a lot of pressure from the US on Israel to conclude the war. I don't see how Israel can, enlarge this conflict and sustain that. I would really hope, as I said earlier, that hope the response, which will happen. I don't think that Israel is not going to just take the Iranian attack quietly. It will respond. But I hope it's able to calibrate, come up with a calibrated response which Iran is able to absorb, and then they just call it quits. You know, there is a recent history in this regard, right? Iran attacked Pakistan with ballistic missiles. Pakistan responded with an attack of its own using its air force. And then they both de-escalated. Similarly, if you go back after Balakot, India struck Pakistan in Balakot. The very next day, the Pakistanis responded. And although that was a provocative act by Pakistan, where it attacked India's military facilities, we had a jet shot down and a POW taken, but the hostilities stopped there. Both the sides did not kind of seek to escalate further. So we have precedents of other states doing that in their own interest. What are the calculations running in Israel, in Netanyahu's mind in particular, may be different. So we have to see. But I don't see how Israel can, escalate this to where it goes to a large-scale war with Iran, because Iran will activate all its proxies. It will expand, because ultimately it will draw the US in, because the US will not leave Israel undefended. And then you will see an enlarged conflict. And that is in nobody's interest.
Absolutely.
It's a very tough situation right now. Anything can happen. It can spiral out of control, or if there are better sane heads around over there which can prevail over the other hotheads, we can get a de-escalation. But the situation right now is very tense.
Let's hope the latter happens, Yusuf. Thank you so much for participating in this episode of All Things Policy. I hope everyone liked this episode. We are recording this on Monday night, and the episode is going on air on Thursday morning. So anything can happen in the next few days. So if something happens and it was not discussed, or something that we discussed did not turn out to be correct, then we can blame it on the recording. Thank you so much once again, Yusuf.
Thanks, Sachin.
For being here. And I'll see you in another episode of All Things Policy soon. Bye-bye.
Sure, Sachin. Thanks. Good night.
If you liked our show, dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs. Check us out at our Twitter handle at takshashilainst or our website takshashila.org.in.